This is Beyond Busy. I'm Graham Alcott. I'm the author of a number of books, including the global bestseller, How to Be a Productivity Ninja. And I'm the founder of Think Productive. We help people to make space for what matters and get more done. And we partner with some of the world's leading companies who share our mission to transform the world of work. Beyond Busy is where I explore the often messy truths and contradictory relationships around topics like work-life balance, happiness, and success, and explore with interesting people what makes them tick. In short, this is where we ask the bigger questions about work. My guest today is Dave Linton. Dave is a former youth worker turned entrepreneur and is the founder of Madlug. Dave started Madlug in 2015 with less than 500 quid, and the company has won hearts and wallets with its cool backpacks and luggage. Each product sold allows the company to donate a similar item to a young person in the foster care system. And in this episode, Dave explains why it's so important for kids in care to receive these bags. We talk about kindness, leadership, meeting Richard Branson, and much more. It's an inspiring one this week. This is Dave Linton. Dave Linton, welcome to Beyond Busy. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks, and it's great to be on your show.
And we were just having a little conversation offline about B Corp, which is what you've got in the background. So you're the founder of now a certified B Corp. How does that feel, first of all?
Yeah, no, it's good. So we've set out from the start to fix problems. So getting the B Corp certification kind of says we're not just people who talk about it, but we're people who do it. And that's really why we're excited about it.
And there'll be some people that don't know what B Corp is. So do you want to just explain, like, what is a B Corp?
Yeah, so I think it's really just businesses that are doing good for people and planet. So it's kind of getting certification around that through an audit and becoming part of a community that says, you know, we're committed to making a social impact, but also be good for planet as well.
So the B Corp that we're talking about is your company, Madlug. And this just really caught my eye. Like the idea of making a difference through luggage. I'd just love you to tell the story. So how did it come about? What was the genesis of the business?
Absolutely, Graham. Madlug came about, it basically stands for Make a Difference Luggage. And it came about after finding out that there are 90,000 children and young people in the care system across the UK. One child move in every 15 minutes and most have their belongings moved in black plastic bin bags or plastic shopping bags. And so when I heard that, I was on a course with my wife looking to do some more fostering and came across it and I was like, I've got to fix that. And so Madlug really is the fix to that after going through a journey of, you know, do a set of charity up and run a few marathons and do all the kind of stuff for that. Yeah. Or create a business that could generate profit and out of the profit really make huge impact to kids in care and giving them dignity through a gift of a new bag.
Yeah, so when someone buys a Madlug bag, you then donate another bag to somebody who's in care, right?
Yeah, so simple. Every time we sell one of our bags, backpacks, gym bags, duffel bags, whatever, we give a pack-away travel bag to a child or young person in care. And to date, we've given over 52,000 of those. Wow. And that's in 6 years. Yeah. And we have currently 14,000 on order. So that's 66,000 kids will have been given dignity as a result of this.
Yeah. And, you know, like so many people that I talk to, conversations come back to just at the heart of everything is dignity, right? Like it just feels
absolutely.
Whatever you're working on, you know, if you can just start with dignity, then you're on the right track, right?
Absolutely. But I would go even further back and say that dignity is the byproduct of value. Mm. So, you know, we do what we value and what we value is what we do. It's something so important to just do it. So for me, you know, it's whether it's children care for us as an organization, as a business, or a homelessness for another or wherever, it's simply that there's value in the young people or the children in the care system. And because of that value and worth, then we treat them with dignity.
Yeah. What do you think is how would you describe, because I know you've been a foster carer before, like
How would you describe the state of that system, the care system, and how does it treat people? What are some of the main issues in that system that you see?
We try and stay out of the system, to be honest, as a company, because one is you get pulled into, and then you start to having to please the people who are running the system. So we want to be a trusted voice outside the system, where the system trusts us. We're not going to get big kind of like, you know, double page spreads and papers and big sticks hitting them and that they're doing a bad job. But I think the core thing for me is, and that there's so many complexities, but the issue goes back to seeing the children as children, or the young people as young people, is that if you don't see that, then you have people doing tasks of jobs, and the task is, we have a child to get placed in this location, and we're struggling, and the accomplishment and the cheerleading in many ways goes for getting the placement rather than the child. So I think just the complexities of that, I think that at the core, that's there. And it's that whole value and worth piece again for children and young people, I believe, is key. But there is a lot, the care system is in a mess, because, you know, there are kids that are being left independent at 16 years of age, being left in unregulated accommodation. The government are cleaning their hands off them and saying, we're not really. And so there's a lot of complexities around that. You know, the fact that kids are carrying their belongings in bin bags, you know, I mean, it's I don't think anybody sets out to do it, but it's just through sloppiness in many ways, it unpreparedness. We have policy, so I think it's being done, but people aren't putting stuff or coming with bags or having them sitting ready where they're needed. It's just that. Yeah, so if you take that multiplied over a lot of issues, it's bin bags just, you know, exploded, then you can tell it tells you really the system is stretched and in a bit of a mess.
Yeah, and just for you personally, if you were talking to someone who was saying, I'm interested in becoming a foster carer, like what have you got from that system, both positively and negatively? So what are the things that you found really rewarding by being a foster carer, and then what are the things that you've maybe found less good?
So we, my wife and I are adoptive parents as well. So that's, you know, we adopted our daughter out of the care system. And then we had some experience in respite foster care. So we don't actually do any foster care now. And taking the step into Mad Lug meant that I downsized the house. There wasn't the capacity. So my way of helping and promoting children in care is through doing this. And but I would say that fostering is an amazing thing, because you can become a significant adult in a young person's life. So I think, go back to my own story, even, you know, I share this quite openly, is that, you know, why do I really care about children and young people in care? Well, it goes back to my own dad died when I was 5. My mom was a widow, and it was the significant neighbors around. You know, it was the people next door that took us in and supported us to allow my mum to go out and do a job, and took us on holidays with them, became kind of non-blood aunts and uncles in my world. And I think as a foster carer, you can play that role as a significant adult in the lives of children and young people in the care system. The challenges of it is that you're stretched, and so there's a support issue, I think, often there. I keep saying, from a marketing perspective, is, you know, if you market out of desperation, you're going to struggle. And I think sometimes the system markets, we need foster carers, out of a place of desperation. But actually, if we were to say, it's an amazing privilege to care for the young people who can't be at their own homes at this stage, and we would love to invite you into the story of making a difference and journeying with us as we show love and growth and impact into these kids, you would have more people, I think, sign up. But if you're desperate and the system is being presented as being on its knees and stretched, you suddenly start to go, no matter how much I love and I have a desire to do this, I'm maybe not going to do that because that's high risk.
Yeah, for sure. And also when people hear those stories about the system being very procedural and things being inflexible and all that sort of stuff, it's like, No one enjoys spending time in systems that don't seem to listen to you, right? It's just
absolutely
not where people want to spend their time, right?
Absolutely. But yeah, the other side is that when you're working with a young person or a child, you know, we have that. One of our, you know, in fact, the one place where we have still comes to is at the age of 27. It's a single mom with three kids. And it's just like, you know, consistent adults. So it doesn't stop. You know, when you suddenly get those relationships, you know, it's nearly like it becomes family without it being officially family.
Yeah, that's amazing. Let's talk about the business then. So with Madlug, I read that you started the business with £480. Is that right?
Yeah, so really it was 500. You know, the 20 pounds was my first month off my kind of Shopify account to run the website.
Right. Okay.
And the £480 was a deposit for the 40% deposit for the graphic design company to do the brands. And so it was literally like, I am convinced this is going to work. And, you know, even to get somebody working on it for me was just like, well, okay, that's 40%. We'll work it out as we go along. And that's been the story. So, that £480 has now grown into a business that, say, 66,000 kids will have been helped. We have a staff team of six of us here, and we've worked with some of the biggest, you know, companies in the world, like IKEA. You know, we have Shopify as one of our clients. We've sent out to Canada and New Zealand. And so, you know, from that, and we haven't had any investment now. We've had a couple of small business grants, but very, very small. In the bigger scale of things, but no external investors or anybody putting in. So it's been the pure old, let's start really small, keep it lean, and then grow. And I used, it was probably about 3 years before I came full time into even taking any salary out of it. It was, you know, doing a bit of consultancy and a bit of anything that paid me well for a shorter amount of hours so that I could spend time spending more hours on the thing it didn't pay me, was my kind of strategy.
Yeah. It's fun, isn't it? Because my business is pretty similar. You know, it's bootstrapped. I didn't have a lot of money at the beginning. I didn't pay myself for a while. And it feels like there's a lot of talk. If you watch Dragon's Den or other business shows, there's a lot of talk about getting big investments and starting businesses with, you know, with loans and other people's money. But actually, there's an awful lot of businesses that just start through bootstrapping and organic growth and just reinvesting the profits until you get to a stage where it, you know, where it gets more interesting kind of thing. It feels like it's like it doesn't get talked about.
Yeah, and I actually believe that you have a stronger business than doing it the other way. Now, if I was to go and do a second business, would I start at that place? Probably not, because there's the learning that gives you a better starting place. But I think, like for me, as 22 years a youth worker, I'd never done business before. Did no bag industry, anything like that. It was simply, I wanted something to help me communicate the problem, and bags made it. And then I've grown to love bags and love the kind of learning. But for me, the thing I've learned is, particularly I would say I'm very much on the visionary side of leadership. So it's, you know, the risk is that you can over-design and keep creating. The, you know, stimulation in me is the creation of stuff. And, you know, and that maybe working for people became frustration once you get to a position where there's no more creating allowed and the ceiling is on it of what the organization you worked within. So, but now that kind of like you're leading and growing this, you've got to create your own ceilings. So I'd say that £500, I remember there was a social enterprise working with people leaving prison in Northern Ireland here, and they got £500,000 of funding to do a social business, and 9 months into it, we both got listed by the Observer in London as a new radical, one of 50, and we were only two in Northern Ireland. They started at 500,000, we started with 500. That organization is no longer there. It didn't happen after the money disappeared, and the reason being, they went to wrong locations, they hired too many staff, they built the business of what they saw 5 years on rather than what was needed for starting. And I think as a visionary, I had that risk. If somebody had given me £500,000, I probably have went to the wrong warehouse, had too many staff in, too much stock, not learnt the product. and all of that stuff. And I probably wouldn't be here today either. So that I'm a believer in the kind of bootstrapped approach.
Yeah, and also you, because you're doing it all, it's all with your own money. So you put your, that original 500 quid in, but then obviously the money that it makes, you've made that. So when you reinvest it, it feels like it's your money too. And then, so when you're doing it all with your own, as opposed to being able to take big punts with somebody else's cash, and if it goes wrong, well, it's someone else's cash. Like, it does feel like you kind of treat it more with respect in a way.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, and that is the case. However, in Madlug, I don't actually own it. So we created from the start purely, and we didn't want to ever be seen as, I didn't want to ever be seen as making wealth out of,
yeah,
of
right.
children's of stories of young people. Yeah. So what we did was we've created, we're a community interest company, locked assets. So that means that if anything ever is sold or stopped, any asset in the business is given to a charity or social enterprise working with kids in care. So I'm really comfortable with that. You know, as I work really hard, I get a salary for what I do, and you know, we're making a difference and that. But it has that same feel, because for me,
yeah.
the drive yeah. is not the money; it's actually the yeah. seeing something grow. And so reinvesting it back in, doing whatever it takes, is that entrepreneurial of wanting to grow something to the vision of which you have right at the very start. And for me, it was no child should carry the life in a bin bag.
And it's really interesting that when you started the business, the first thing you did was graphic design and brand, and you didn't know anything about luggage and how to create luggage. So what was the process there? Like, did you fly out to China and look at factories? Like, how did you figure that out?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. The place I started with brand is, I think as a youth worker, I really understood the importance of story. And when you have £500, you're left with a thing of, do you get innovative in design or do you get innovative in story? And so Madlug took on out of its research. I walked shops and stores and looked online at every bag company, and I could identify some classic trends that were in every company. The likes of the, as you probably see at the back, the one with the pocket just in the front, that's a classic backpack that many companies do. So I thought, well, if we can do something classic, the work's already done. And I can source them bags. I'm not having to go and spend a huge amount of time. I can source bags through companies that will allow me to that have quality, have the ethics, have that, and get it at the right price point. So for me then, the brand was what makes us stand out. And my mandate to the company for the brand was, we can't leave, at the time we were launching, it was all patterns in bags. So if, you know, full on, and when we were doing research, you know, kids were going pattern bags, plain bags were not really there. But to bring in pattern bags is so subjective to, you know, people's preferences.
Yeah.
And I thought, I could really get. So the idea was, let's get plain bags, core colors, and we create the logo to stand out. So the color was in the logo, which is why we went with a really, really, really bold brand compared to something subtle. Because that was how we did it. We also, at the start, and we do a lot of this still even now, is we want to create employment opportunities. So we do part finishing of the bags here. And part of the thing was the risk management, Graham, of that is that if I brought in, say, 500-600 bags of a new color, you know, because you can get them made and bring them in, it's not an issue with that. But if I bring 500-600 bags of a new color and it doesn't sell, is it I have to then devalue the Madlug brand by discounting. So my attitude is, if it's classic design, quality, I can sell those as blank bags, actually, right, through other means, okay, without yeah. it ever having a cheap discount Madlug brand.
Yeah,
on.
Or doing that thing that I've heard of retailers who, if someone brings something like a, like, I think some of the handbag companies do this, and other real like luxury designer goods, where if it gets brought back into the store, they cut it up so that people can't take it, staff can't take it home as a return or something. Like, so they're just cutting up perfectly good products and stuff. It's unbelievable.
We're just trying to make it so that we can be innovative in offer, in color, you know, so we have lots of variety for the size of business we are, but it allows us to take that risk, you know, that allows us, and it also creates employment opportunities. So we have somebody that does that, and we do a lot of co-branding for corporates as well. So we do a lot of that in-house. And
nice. And then, so the bags that get donated to the young people in care, so they're slightly different, aren't they? So they don't have the Madlug logo on it. Do you want to just explain about that?
Yeah, so whenever we went in to do it, I spoke to some business help, and they said, yeah, you need to check this out. Then I went to a charity that worked with Care Experience Young People and said, is bin bags an issue? Did all my research, and they said, let's get a group of young people, our interns, and you can do a Dragon's Den with them. So I pitched to them, and some of the stuff that we came up with was, they didn't at that stage, Mad Dog was unknown, it was an idea at the time, but they didn't want the brand on it that created stigma. So the idea of unbranded. They said bin bags were often used in the care system because of being prepared and space. So if you take a box off backpacks or suitcases, you know, you can't really carry those around in your everyday for a social worker. So there was just that place of being accessible. And they loved the term, which is what our kind of why in the business is. We believe every child and young person in care is incredible because they have huge value, worth, and deserve to be treated with dignity. And they love the value, worth, dignity line. So we thought, how do we put that on the bag without it being kind of like stigma and so forth? So that led to a little pack-away bag that opens up into a 35-litre travel bag. And one of the bags opened up holds 20 of these bags folded up. So one duffel bag in the back of a social worker's car can either help one child with lots of stuff or a child that has little stuff, and 20 of those. And even came, believe it or not, Graham, down to the size of the bag, because we were like, you know, well, that's a small bag. Could we do 50 litres and 100 litre bags? And he says, Dave, the problem is you will, you know, reinforce the issue if you go too big. Because a child that has lots of stuff, you can just give them three bags. But a child that has little stuff in a huge bag just reinforces that sense of worthlessness and nothingness. And so that led us into this specific bag.
Wow. And is it right that some of the bags have just like "You're incredible" written on them as well?
So that is the bag we give to you. So yeah, when it's folded up, they get to see that you're incredible.
Oh, that's
and then when it's opened up, there's no branding.
Right. And
that has become part of our story. So it's like, you know, what's the size of the business is one growth perspective, but actually when what we've grown into is a business that has not just providing funds for giving of bags, but like a non-verbal communicator of care to young people. So the more young people know that Mad Lug believes that you're incredible, huge value, worth, dignity, we connect the people wearing it. And we've seen that as part of it. Like, for instance, I'll tell you a story of a time when that happened. There was a youth festival type place. There was 1,500 young people at it. We had been selling for about 2 or 3 years at this event. And it was simply, you know, we started this particular year, we saw over 300 of these 1,500 young people carrying our Mad Lug backpacks. So it was quite cool. You know, every group of young people, you saw the other brands and then ours.
That's pretty cool.
And but during that time, a youth worker was coming along and says, I'm buying a bag for my wife. He says, love what you do. We have a young person who's with us at this festival who is in foster care. I said, well, there's no stigma around here. Why don't you just tell them to come down to our stand, choose a color of backpack, and we'll give him a backpack. Just tell him he's incredible. So he doesn't even have to introduce himself to me. He just has to let you know the color, and I'll give it to you for him. And there's no awkwardness, no agenda in this. So the last day, the youth worker arrives down and says, Dave, this is Jay. And I said, Jay, what color bag would you like? And he says, I'm colorblind. I says, which football team do you support? And he chose a red bag. And I go over and get this red backpack. He's standing with his big smile. He says, Jay, tell me your story. He says, Dave, I've been in care for 10 years. I'm 17 and a half now. And for a 2-week period, I moved with my belongings 15 times in bin bags.
Wow.
And because placements were breaking down. And he says, "What you're doing is amazing. What you're doing is amazing." And I remember sitting looking outside the marquee where we were selling from and seeing all these young people just walking around. And tears started coming down my eyes, feeling like just that emotional when you've given it all and you're just seeing this kind of growth. I apologized to him and says, "I'm sorry." He says, "That's okay." I says, "What's truly amazing, Jay, is this, that there are over 300 young people in this festival that have chosen to buy Madlog bags over other brands. Why? Because every one of them believes you're incredible." He came back later that night and he says, with a friend, and I just remember the smile on the face of the friend, and he says, "Dave, I've just had to come back and say thank you." And the 17 and a half year old just gave me this huge big hug. And then 2 days after that, Graham, in Facebook, we get this message: "Met Dave Linton at this event. So blown away by your organization, I've decided that I'm going to be 18 soon. And for my 18th birthday, I'm going to give all the money that I get to the work of Madlog so that other young people can experience what I've experienced." And so something changed in me. It was like, Madlog is this little bag company that's set out purely just to raise funds to give more bags to kids. But actually, we're starting to see in London, and Manchester, and Belfast, and we wanted to see where people and community and society are actually carrying Madlog bags and communicating love without words to an unseen group within society, which is children in care, that only get seen by the professionals in the world because of their under 18 status. And so we have this dream where it's near like that non-verbal communication of which we're growing, which is why we sell to estates and we sell into, but why we haven't really done a big move into those countries, because that's part now of our strategy. We want local people to be carrying the bags to communicate that love without words to the local young people in those towns and cities.
And it's just like this exchange of stories, isn't it? Like, you know, in a way you sell bags, but really what you're selling and exchanging is these stories and, like you say, this communication of dignity and love and everything else. Yeah,
absolutely. But yeah. But then alongside that, you've got to have a business that sells great quality bags and have great quality bags that look great, people want. And, you know, because you can sell a bag once, but you'll not get a repeat customer unless it's all of the stuff. And so for us, we put a huge amount of time into the commercials and making sure that's all right, so that we can continue to do more of the impact, so that we can have more stories like Jay. But not for us having the stories, his story that's been inspired and encouraged through the simply people wearing a bag.
Yeah. So one of the other things I read about you is that, like, so I think you've done some Christian youth work before, like faith's a very important thing to you.
Absolutely.
Tell me about how faith interacts with the motivation for this. So Madlog isn't it's not a Christian company, but the Christian faith is a really important thing in terms of how you operate.
Yeah, I totally affirm that Madlog isn't a Christian organization or ministry or anything like that. I am a Christian who is in leadership within an organization like this and I founded this. And so it really drives me, but it's simply because there's one verse that really stands out in the Bible, is that this is what true religion is, to love orphans and widows in times of trouble. And for me, that's really at the heart of what we do and why we do it, why I do it and why I've created this, is that this is what true religion is, to love orphans. And orphans, I believe, today are often the care experienced young people who either have lost parents or can't be living at home with their parents.
Mm. And how does that impact on you as a leader, do you think? Like, what would you how would you describe yourself as a leader? What kind of leader are you?
Yeah, so I think the faith part for me is that there's a confidence in who I am and what I come to every day because of my faith in the source of what I believe is my life, which is Jesus. But you know, so I would say that, but also I'm learning to be to understand how I'm wired in many ways. And it's understanding, being, trying to be self-aware of, you know, the creativity that I have and some of the areas I don't do. So I don't just run away from the stuff that I don't do well. I press into that stuff. So I get a leadership coach around to help me, how do I become a better administrator in my leadership? And so all of that. So I think, but I think at the core, the faith part for me is just the confidence. But I say there's another part in that, is it's being content. So I have no desire for to grow super wealth, or no, I have a desire to help people. And I think that at the core of that, that's my faith that drives that.
Yeah, contentment's a really huge thing. I've been talking to a friend of mine recently who is just sort of on the verge of selling a business and will make a lot of money from it. But then it's this whole thing of that you sort of take so long on the climb towards wealth, but then actually like he's going to end up wanting to do another business you know, after that, because I think he isn't quite clear on what contentment would mean for him, right? Like I feel like contentment is something that if you can nail contentment, then like happiness is actually really easy, right? Like contentment's almost like the more difficult bit.
I totally agree with that. And there is a thing where there's a risk with being content that you then procrastinate, or you don't get up.
Yeah,
you
know? Right.
So I'd say I'm really content on where I live and with my family and what I have and stuff that I'm super content. Mm. But there's a discontent in the sense that I'm not content with the situation of the children in care. There's discontent with some of the social injustice in the world, and so that discontent is what drives vision. You know, it's and that's where I think you can't really talk about vision unless you're you know, discontent or dissatisfied, or something is driving you to go, I don't like this, so this is going to drive me to this. It's better than we know today type stuff. So I'm content in my own self, my own place off. You know, I don't get up every day thinking I've got to make lots of money, I want to move house, I've got to drive the nicest car. I have none of that, which I'm thankful for, because then, you know, I'm sitting here nearly 50 and going, you know, I get to get up every day and enjoy what I do. Where I have lots of friends who have been on the kind of career path of, and at our stage, my stage, you know, are sitting with huge mortgages, fancy cars, 4 holidays a year, holiday homes. But they're looking at their life and going, we've got 25 years before we can retire, and I'm trapped. Mm. And so I'm so glad that I'm not in that place.
Yeah, yeah, freedom from stuff and freedom from, you know, a lot of those people with fancy cars have still got loans to pay for them, right?
And there's nothing wrong if you can afford it. And it's not, I don't pose my beliefs or my view on that. But I just, from a pure inner person, that's what, you know, when I get up every day, I'm content with that stuff.
Yeah. And that's it. That feels like you've really nailed it, you know, in terms of your own life, where you're able to, you know, you're able to then, because you've almost like ticked the box around personal stuff and contentment there, it's like then you can really put focus on what's the social mission, what's the community problem that I want to solve, or the thing that I'm restless about over there.
But there is an element where I need a little bit of discontent in my own personal world, because, you know, what's equally, and if you're talking about the balanced life, and, you know, is the whole area for me is that, you know, I need a bit of discontent so that I have vision for the other parts of my life outside of Mad Love. Because the risk is that you can be so discontent in the thing you do there that then you just, you don't turn up necessarily in that space because you're so content and it just happens and life. So there's an element is, what is the, you know, what is my vision for my family, for my other parts, my retirement, my that. There's an element where I probably need a little bit more discontent there to create a healthy balance in many ways.
It's like healthy tension, isn't it? Like you've got to have that tension between the restless and the content. Yeah, for sure. I'm writing a book about kindness at the moment.
Okay.
And I've just finished the first draft of it. So there's probably still time to ask you about kindness. And then if you say something profound, I'll quote you in the book. But the idea is it's looking at the role that kindness plays in leadership. So I'm just interested in your thoughts on, you know, what you see as kindness and maybe some of the leaders that you've known who've been particularly kind or unkind.
Yeah, I think as a leader, kindness is when things happen to you, that you can move on past that and show, you know, the fact that leave things in the room, or kindness is, you know, and I've had to work a little bit at this because it's not my natural default, but it's trying to understand the stories that underline the outcomes that and the way people live. So if you have staff, for instance, it, you know, it's trying to understand that there might be something deeper that's going on at home, something that to me as a leader is kindness. It's being able to ask, how are you doing? What are you doing? And I think the risk of leaders is that we don't often, you know, we're so fixed on the thing we're in to do, the jobs, the tasks, the pressures drive us, that we lose that part. So I have to be really intentional and to do that. I think that for me is a huge, huge part of kindness and leadership. You know, it's a then, because when you're kind, you become a servant. And I love I love this whole concept. We use it in our marketing strategy of, you know, never play the hero, always be the guide. And I think if you take that into life in other areas, is that everybody that we work with, everybody that we lead, we should always be positioning ourselves as the guide. And the kindness of a guide is the person who wants that person to become the hero. So how can I make your life better? How can I help you? How can I empower you? And it gives you that more thoughtful kind of position. So we do it as a brand. You know, we say that, you know, we guide people to, you know, Mad Lug is not the hero of fixing children in care, but the customer is, by buying the bag and wearing it. But if you take that, if you do take that throughout, you do have that, you know, how do I help people? How am I position myself in the guide role within everybody I work, whether it's the people I work with, the people I work for, the people I live with, the people I engage with. That's where I think. And if we had guides as leaders, I think we would have great, kind leaders.
That's it, right? It's all about the Yoda, not the Luke Skywalker. You mentioned there the idea that being intentional with checking in with people and what's going on for them personally, and taking an interest in that side of people rather than always just being focused on here's my goal. So what does being intentional around that stuff look like? What have you tried to do differently? What are the kind of practical steps of that for you?
So the practical steps is being really in, you know, putting it in. The first thing I ask people is how are you doing? Or if somebody is not looking a little bit down, or maybe not in the game, or it's then saying, is everything okay? Before you challenge the stuff, or, you know, where it'd be very easy, come on, you know, sports coach type of road. So that's where I have to, and it's not my natural. You know, my natural is I am so caught in the creative space up here, and I see what I often struggle to celebrate wins, because for me the vision is so big that the win isn't really a win because it's only part of the building. So you have to, you know, but part of that is self-awareness, and then you have to realize that that needs done because it's important to the other people that you work around. So that's kind of how I've kind of tried to work on that.
Sounds like we've been on similar journeys with a lot of that stuff, to be honest. One of the things I've just been writing about for the book is I'll often get these emails, which, like, as the founder of the company, people are sending me an email almost as if it's like, can you just, like, give me permission to carry on with this, right? And it's like, I've done this thing. What do you think of this thing? And often when I get those emails, I go straight into the natural rhythm of my brain goes straight into, okay, looking at all this, what's the bit that's wrong? What needs fixing? You know, so like, I'll sometimes be halfway through the reply email that's like, this thing on page 4 needs to change or whatever. And then, and like, I've got better over the years of like sort of trying to bypass that bit of my brain and starting with, okay, so start with, this all looks really great. Like, because actually sometimes what people really need to hear at the start of that is just approval that they're on the right track. And I jump straight into some small detail and miss that. And then after this is really great, it's like, here's what I would suggest around this thing, whatever. But just like really giving people that praise and that recognition and, you know, and the sort of positivity around the stuff that's gone well, rather than just like lasering in on the one thing that's wrong, right? But that's just like, sounds like we're on a really similar journey with it, because that's just not my natural thought process.
And that's exactly where I get to, you know. So you come in and you've got into the production side, and you haven't been around maybe for a week, and you go and there's one bag and you think, oh, that's just not centered. and it's out before you realize where it's that kind of learning is, you know, trying how you address that stuff and think of it. So for me, that's kindness as a leader. But it all starts, I think, with self-awareness and not... I think a thing I'm learning at the minute is it's so easy to then just kind of excuse because you think you're self-aware. So, you know, I'm a creative, so just live with me as that. But actually, I think as leaders, there's an element where we've got to press into the stuff. I listened to a podcast with Stephen Bartlett interviewing the founder of Gymshark, and that he had kind of talked a lot about this, where, you know, he got somebody in who was a CEO and didn't take on the role of CEO and used it as a learning, and it was because there was areas of his life that actually he thought I can't, but he made a choice that he was going to press into the things and learn how to be a public speaker and learn how to lead and clear. And I think there's a lot of wisdom and truth in that, where, you know, I know I've made so many excuses in the past for just, oh, well, that's me. I'm so self-aware. I know what I'm like. And I try and pass that on to the people around me to then give me a Bible on the things I don't do well.
Yeah.
And it's then learning that actually I need to learn how to do some of this stuff, because I can do some of this stuff.
But like knowledge is the booby prize in that situation. So you're being self-aware, like if what you're aware of is a thing that you still screwed up, like you still screwed it up, right? So,
absolutely.
So in a way, it's either better to do something with the knowledge and get to the other side, or to not know, to just be self-aware, but know that it's kind of always like big halfway there is the worst place to be. I also read that you had brunch with Richard Branson.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Wow. So before I ever started Mad Lug, I won nothing and got to do none of those kind of things. You know, I was always that person that there was a prize, I never got it. And then Mad Lug started, and, you know, he suddenly started to get a few awards and things like that. And so the Richard Branson came about by, I was part of an accelerator program in the early days with the equivalent of NatWest in Northern Ireland. They sent out a thing, Virgin are in town today in the city in their big red bus, and there's an opportunity to pitch to win £5,000 and have brunch with Richard Branson. And so I put in the application to record a video and pitched, and I didn't get through to the final of it. So I thought, that's really interesting. But what I'll do is I'll go down and I'll see who got through and see what I can learn, how to improve that for the next time. So again, it was that kind of wanting to learn, wanting to connect, and if I go down and it's not really that great, I'll go and work in a local coffee shop in the city centre that day. And so I headed down to the Virgin bus, and it was kind of afternoon was the pitching, but they had a number of these kind of like people speaking from the side of it about different things. And there was a girl I remember, and she talked about crowdfunding. And I had kind of in my mind, crowdfunding was never going to be something we did, because, you know, I couldn't actually risk the failure of crowdfunding. You know, no business background, no money. it would have just been a big stamp saying, Dave, you know, we kind of told you this mightn't work. So there was an element where we had to do it differently. And but I stood and listened for 10 minutes and was really inspired. And they said, anybody that wants to learn more, just put your name down and you can meet the Virgin team throughout the day. So I went forward, put the name down, and the girl taking the stuff said, what's your story? I shared the story, and by the time I was waiting for the person to crowdfund, I ended up talking to a PR person and three or four people in the day. It was a really productive day. And the crowdfunding girl says, you know, what you've got is amazing. And if you ever want to do crowdfunding, so it was no kind of like sign up. So I went off on holiday. It was the first holiday we had taken as a family to France, you know, so it wasn't a lot of money. We had really worked hard to have this holiday. And a day into it, I get an email and it said to my wife, I'm not going to work. So, you know, but it was a Saturday in between the two, and she heads off to get some laundry done in the campsite. And I take out the iPad and it was this email says, Dave, chance to get back in the game, have brunch with Branson. All you have to do is pitch 60 seconds to get in. So I take the iPad while my wife was away. And then I felt like I was Branson because clear skies in the middle of outside. And took a video and recorded 60 seconds and sent it off. To then 2 days later, getting a thing saying, you've been successful. Somebody will be in touch to tell you what you've entered. And I entered a crowdfunding competition without realizing.
Oh, wow.
And I was coming back because it was in France. I was coming back with like a couple of days to get it set up. So there was no setup. And it was whoever could raise the most money in the first 72 hours of the crowdfunding campaign won £1,000 and had a chat. Was in with a chance to get meet Branson. So I had no option but to get home. I hadn't done all the networking and go and find investors and get the big, you know, kind of stuff moving. So I just went on Facebook and says, guys, chance to get in the game. Why don't you get behind us? We need to raise as much money as we can the first 72 hours. I know you're good at this. And we were £6,000 5 minutes before the end of that 72 hours. And as a result, two companies came in and with bigger, you know, £6,000 and totally blew us. We came third. The one that won didn't raise another penny after they got their £1,000. The one that came second didn't raise their total, so they didn't get anything. And we went on to that to finish at £24,500. And so as a result of that, the crowdfunding organization that was doing this came back and said, we want to invite you to go and meet Richard Branson on Thursday. So this was Friday. We'll not tell you where it is, just in a location in London to be at. And that's kind of how, and there was six other entrepreneurs in there kind of having breakfast with them. So it was a really special time. And actually, they tell you never to meet your heroes. But actually, it was one of those highlights, to be honest, that he's a real deal. And he talked a lot about dyslexia, and I'm dyslexic. Yeah. So there was a lot of kind of, I just found it a really positive experience.
Was there anything that he said to you about your business that really stuck with you?
Yeah, so the he talked a lot. For me, it was this, the dyslexia part really stuck, you know, in the sense, see it as, you know, see your those things as challenges, as opportunities, see them as strengths, see them as super weapons, you know. And so I've learned to really kind of push into that rather than seeing it as a disability. So that's been good. And he talked about, you know, one of the questions I did ask him was like, so who's your first hire? You know, a company like ours, because there's always that risk of how you get, and he brought some wisdom into that around, you know, just getting advice from and maybe getting retirement. So we built a board up of people like that, and then I've since recruited staff there.
And then the last question I want to ask you, because we talk on this show a lot about productivity and happiness, and feels like you've built something and been really productive with that, and also nailed the happiness and contentment, but also work-life balance. And I was struck by something you were saying earlier about you've got to get that you've got to have a little bit of discontent in the personal life and stuff. So like, do you tell me about work-life balance? Do you feel like you've got the balance right? What have you learned over the years around that?
Yeah, I definitely haven't got that right at times, and probably more times it wrong than I have. However, you know, the thing is, I've got an amazing wife who is extremely supportive, but also extremely keeps me level, grounded, you know. And so there's an element where, you know, if it was just down to me, I'd probably be a lot worse at it. But there's elements where just that sense of, and I think that's why, you know, for me, I couldn't do, if I wasn't married to my wife, I would struggle. I probably wouldn't be healthy to do what I'm doing. But there's an element where that whole family, and then you have teenagers, and there's demands there and needs there that force you to take time out and have to be there and turn up and stuff. So, you know, I kind of over the years have tried not to use the balanced life, because I think that sometimes it looks like, you know, there's a pivot point, and sometimes it's over here. And I quite like the idea of the blended life. It just, there's times where pressures push on, and trying to have that more blended approach. But it's definitely an area where probably I need to spend more time focusing on my own development.
Mm. And maybe don't we all, right? Maybe all of us have always still got something to learn around that.
Well, I mean, my own personal leadership coach that I have meet with every month, you know, we've just been talking about where to go and going a little bit deeper into what I do. And that's just this week was the conversation is, I don't necessarily want you to help me be more productive in Madlo, because I think I do that well. It's now helping me be the better leader in all the other stuff.
Yeah.
And so that's where we're going to be pressing into.
Well, that feels like a really good place to wrap up the chat, but I'm just really keen. Well, firstly, Dave, I just want to say you're incredible. And okay, just such an inspiring story. And I would just love people to go and support you and check it out. So how do people find out more about Madlug? How do they connect with you? Just anything else you want to share as well?
Yeah, so there's two ways of getting connected. So madlug.com, if you are somebody who needs backpacks or duffel bags, or your kids need that for school next year, is get on, check the story. And then there's also madlugyourbusiness.com, which is our other side of the business that is working with companies, helping companies increase their social impact by helping children in care. And so replacing bag spend that maybe is currently there into a place where that bag spend gets moved to Madlug and children in care get helped. So those are the two ways, that madlug.com or madlugyourbusiness.com. Is a great way of helping. And then follow us on our socials. You know, we are Madlug, right across Insta, Facebook, Twitter, and so forth, and connect with us there. That would be great.
Fantastic. We'll put all that in the show notes as well. And Dave, thanks so much for being on Beyond Busy.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on your show.
There you go, Dave Linton. I said that one would be inspiring, right? And yeah, just really enjoyed chatting to Dave. Really took me back actually to my early career in promoting volunteering and in charities, and on the board of Centrepoint, the youth homelessness charity, and just a lot of those experiences that I had around mentoring kids in foster care and stuff like that. So really took me back to a lot of those times, and yeah, just hugely inspiring. So yeah, good luck to everything that Madlug are doing. Thanks also, and a shout out to Emma Gibbons, so a former employee of Think Productive actually, and she's now working at Madlug and put us in touch. So just want to say thank you, Emma, for putting that on our radar and fixing us up to do that. So yeah, really enjoyed that episode. As I record this, looking out over my garden, my cat is doing incredible acrobatics, just kind of like jumping, like it's just jumped from the fence down to the bottom. But anyway, a big distance, and he looks like he's fine, as he always is. Yeah, he's coming down now. He's going to come in. Anyway, so just want to say thank you to Emma Gibbons. Thank you also to Emily and Pavel, my team on Beyond Busy. And thanks also, of course, to our sponsors for the show, Think Productive. So if you want us to come in and help boost your team's productivity, then just drop us a line. It's just thinkproductive.com. And also I have this email that goes out every week. It's called Rev Up for the Week. It's free, and it's basically a productive or positive idea for the week ahead, and it goes out every Sunday evening at 4:05 p.m. UK time. So if that's of interest, just go to grahamalcott.com. And if you go to grahamalcott.com/links, you can find out about everything else I'm doing as well. We've got a really big one coming up in a couple of weeks' time. We have the one and only Monica Aldama. She's the coach from the hit Netflix show Cheer, which I've really enjoyed, actually. I hadn't heard of it. And then I was sort of past the book and checked out the first episode and was just hooked immediately. Like, it's such a great show. So go and check out Cheer on Netflix if you haven't already, in preparation for the next podcast in a couple of weeks' time. Go binge watch it. Like, it's really addictive. It's great telly. Really, really good. It's from the makers of Last Chance You, if anyone's seen that, which I also really loved. It's kind of an American sort of college sports thing as well. Really cool. So yeah, Monica Aldama is going to be our guest in 2 weeks' time on the podcast. And yeah, that's it. I'm kind of coming to the end of book edits and all of that stuff, so it's good to just kind of get this book over the line. And over the next few months, I will share with you where you can pre-order it and all that stuff. It's frightening to say that before it's done, but I'm getting there. And it's been a long slog, this book, it has to be said. I think it's going to be my last book for a good while, I think. But one I'm really proud of, and I'm really, yeah, really excited to share it with you when it comes out. Anyway, all of that is to come. But yeah, suffice to say, my life's going to calm down a bit once the book is out of the way. And yeah, looking forward to being a bit less beyond busy myself. But yeah, see you in 2 weeks' time with Coach Monica. Until then, take care. Bye for now.